Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian the Bear. I am here with my boyfriend Pat.
What's going on, guys?
The other bear on our show. And we're here today with a very special guest, Mr. Cena Grace from Image and all points in between, co-writer and illustrator behind the fantastic Burn the Orphanage book featuring a character called Bear, who is very near and dear to us. How are you doing today, Cena?
I'm going to be a little honest. Today's not the best day. My dog, I came back from New York Comic Con, which was fantastic, but I picked up my dog and he's sick. I don't know. The vet is like, he may have pneumonia. He may have something in his stomach, but we injected him with antibiotics and we're at the wait and see phase. Other than that, I'm doing fantastic. So I'm sorry to drop some, you know, downer news on you.
Well, I'm sorry. Trust me, I just had to put my 15 and a half year old Pekingese to sleep a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, dogs, they're our children. I mean, you know, if we actually have children, they're our children. So, I wish him the best. What's his or her name?
His name is Henry. I love dogs with human names. But he's my baby, and he'll be fine. He'll be fine. But it was just, everyone was like, oh, he's just tired, or oh, this, that, and the other. And I was like, I know my dog. He's not well.
I'm sure he'll be bouncing around in no time. So speaking of New York Comic Con, that's where we got to meet in person. Did you have a good New York Comic Con experience?
It was fantastic. People are so nice and so open-minded out in New York. I don't know if I'm the minority in this, but I genuinely enjoy having Artist Alley not be on the convention floor, because everyone who's walking through the aisles has the intention to actually engage with the art. Whereas at some of the bigger shows, if you're, you know, on the main floor, like San Diego Comic Con, people are kind of looking for freebies or looking to get their photo taken, you know, in their cosplay. And that's fantastic, and it's a part of the show, but it's also nice to just engage with people who want to learn about new artists or new comic books.
Yeah, I mean, I did not even realize you were there, because even though I think we had corresponded briefly, and I talked to your co-writer on Burn the Orphanage, Daniel, right?
Yeah, Daniel. Yeah, that fool.
I didn't realize, and he probably even told me, and I'm just that absent-minded, that you would be there. So when I walked by and I saw your beautiful print of Bear dressed as Robin, the Boy Wonder, trick-or-treating for Halloween, I lit up. I don't know if you saw this. I was just beside myself that you were there.
Oh,
so I could say hi, of course. And to meet you. And then, of course, I mean, ended up buying, I think I bought two copies of the print. And then our buddy from Comic Book Bears, Bill Zanowitz, actually, I guess, also came by. He put that up as his favorite print from the show. So, and a t-shirt too, which I have not worn out in public yet. I'm waiting for just the right weekend. And this weekend is Bear Bust here in Orlando. So I may have to wear that shirt and have people ask me about what it is. Cause that's the best part of wearing shirts like that is people like, what is that about? Like, that's a comic book, man. You should check it out. It's got bears in it. And it's about video games. No. But you had a good show. You had a lot of people. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I remember seeing, I think on your, one of your internet feeds, you had actually a couple or at least one cosplayer show up from Burn the Orphanage?
Not this show, but whatever the, I guess the last convention, not the show. At San Diego Comic-Con, I had a number of cosplayers, and I'm saying that so casually and matter-of-factly. That's freaking awesome. Yeah, yeah. Comic-Con was really cool to, you know, they don't tell you half the time. These folks that do cosplay enjoy surprising the creators. So it was just fun to, you know, see someone walk by and go, hey, that kind of looks like, oh shit, that is. So I got Rock and Lex, and then this one dude was like, yeah, Bear was cosplaying walking around, and I think he was referring to himself because he happened to be wearing like a gray tank top and army cargo shorts, which it's such a rare outfit choice for the bears of the world, I'm sure.
I know. You would never find that walking into any bear bar.
As Pat
no,
sets here.
No, I've never seen that at the fault.
Camel. No. So what, so you didn't have cosplayers at New York, but you did get a lot of people stopping by your booth. I know when I was there, there were at least two or three that stopped by. I mean, overall, you were well received, I take it.
Yeah. And even more to the point, I met a lot of bears this weekend, which was fantastic. And I think even more to that point, I met a lot of like bear for bear bears. You know what I mean? I think that like kind of broke that barrier. So many puns that people can inject into that sentence. But, I met a lot of dudes who, you know, don't want to have sex with me, but we now have this thing that we can talk about, and that was a first, and that was a really awesome feeling.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad, so glad you were well received. I mean, every person I've told about this book, I mean, I lead with the fact that it has a bear in it, but then I always come back to the video game angle, because Burn the Orphanage, if you listeners out there have not checked this out, it is basically, I don't know, correct me of course, if it's based on like some of the old fighting games of like the 90s, late 90s from Capcom. I guess it's not Street Fighter exactly. Streets of Rage? Is that one of them?
It's sort of all of them. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the book came out, the book came to be from my friendship with Daniel Friedman, who you'd previously mentioned. We were working beside each other over the years and kind of came up with this entire thing as a big inside joke, you know, melding our common interests in music, pop culture, and of course, video games, the thing we grew up on. So the entire thing is kind of like, it's about friendship. Video games bring people together, you know, from getting a second controller to now, what is it, four controllers to, you know, being on the internet and having 6 million controllers. It's about community, and it, what's really even more funny is that, I don't think more funny is the way you say that. But anyway, what's hilarious is that, I wasn't gonna let Bear be gay. He was gonna be, you know, this bear of a man with a bear heart, cause he gets shot in the heart, you know, as you remember from the Born to Lose arc. But Daniel was like, no, he's gotta be gay. Like, it's gotta be, for all intents and purposes, a bear. And he's as straight as they get. So he kind of curbed my own poor decision making, which is why we're creative soulmates. But yeah, that's the that's Burn the Orphanage. It's a love letter to video games about a bunch of friends beating people up for the, you know, common interest of fun. I don't know.
It's funny because I mentioned before when we had chatted that I actually read the two series backwards. I read Reign of Terror first, which is the second It's the 5-part series that came out for Burn the Orphanage. I read that first, and then went back and read the 3-part Born to Lose story, which was the original story. And it's really odd getting to kind of get that backstory when you go back and you read the first part and go, oh, okay, this is what they were talking about, or oh, this is, you know, what this reference was made about. And then I read Born to Lose, and I read the first issue, and in the first, like, what, half, maybe 3/4 of the book, he super kicks man's head off. And I was like, wait a minute, what? But I, huh? and it took me by surprise, because I really was expecting it to be a more drawn out story, and then was really just kind of shocked that, like, okay, well, I guess that really wasn't the main thing for this book. And then, you know, obviously got through the end of that story, and then went into Demons, and then into the, you know, the third part, and was like, okay, I kind of see where this is all going. But it's just funny reading it backwards and going, wait a minute, this second story has so much to do with Man Jr. that I was expecting something completely different, but was pleasantly surprised by how the story, the 3-part story, could encapsulate so much in just 3 books.
Yeah, the thing about that was, like, we didn't, I mean, gosh, we're so silly, because Daniel and I both studied writing in different ways, and by different means or whatever. I took creative writing courses, and he does a lot of screenwriting stuff, and we just didn't really give two figs about proper, you know, narrative structures. And the thing we did care about in that first volume you're talking about is that, like, revenge begets revenge. So, you know, this little orphan Rock fights his way through the mean streets to figure out who burned down his childhood home. And we resolve it right in that first one, because that was, like, the least interesting thing we wanted to touch upon. We just kind of wanted to use that as, like, the basis of what this world is. And I think that alienated a lot of readers when they were like, wait, it's done? We lost a couple of people, because they really wanted that, like, Streets of Rage final fight element. But at the end of the day, it's like, eh, we followed our hearts, and that's the most important thing.
Well, and you expanded the world. That's the cool thing. I mean, yeah, that story ended, but then you went into, like, a Mortal Kombat, at least what I kind of took away from it, sort of, let's take the hero and make him fight for his life in this faraway world, and have all these other crazy alien, which, I mean, as an artist, I'm sure you, I believe you would agree that that's always a fun thing to draw, is aliens and crazy, zany creatures that, you know, sort of defy any kind of real world analog, because you get to be as, I guess, creative and expressive as you want with them. But, I mean, it kind of just built this universe even pretty quickly over 3 issues, and then yet circled all the way back, so that with this new arc, Reign of Terror, you could kind of maybe go back and do a little bit more of the community building, and then move the story along, like you said, with the revenge angle.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, because we're trying to work, we're kind of drafting the third, you know, story right now, and it's sort of a back to basics thing, which is funny, because it's like this character went from, you know, just kind of being a normal street urchin kind of dude, and going into, you know, going to other dimensions and other worlds, and really all of that is to just get him right back to the town where there's just going to be a bunch of normal people, and he's going to fight them. He's going to fight them all. There's going to be a huge gang war. So it's really, yeah, I hope it'll all come together and coalesce the way I see it in my head, and the way Daniel sees it in his head. But yeah, we definitely did not go the normal way.
But I give you guys a lot of credit for that, because, I mean, we've said it a couple of times in the past few minutes, but you were able to tell a cohesive story and build this world up in less issues than most comic series do over 12 issues in a year, or, you know, even 200 issues when you're talking about some of these storylines that, you know, it's a damn soap opera, and 10 years later, it's like 5 minutes has passed and nothing has been resolved. So it was nice. It was nice to see, you know, okay, this is what the deal is at the beginning of the first issue. He gets the information. He has that resolution. okay, but that resolution now brings him to this point of where the story is, and he's able to kind of move on. You know, and even in 5 issues with Reign of Terror, you know, it was that build up, and it led to, you know, there was less of that kind of multi-story going on. It was that one drive, okay, here's the beginning, and this is what we're getting to in issue 5. But at that point, you're able to kind of slow down, and as Brian was saying, you get to see more of the family dynamics. You know, it's touched on, and you get the scenes between, is it Lex and Bear at the diner, you know, in the first set, but you don't see a ton of those interpersonal relationships, and you see a lot more of that stuff in Reign of Terror, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because it's like, Rock is a very simple character. Like, there's not much about him. And that's what I like about him. He's a very, like, you know, he's pretty dumb. and he's got very few wants in life. Whereas his best friends, Bear and Lex, are a bit more captivating because, you know, Bear is similar in what he wants, where he just wants everything to be okay. But the way he goes about it, you know, is different than the way Rock would go about it and the way Lex would go about it. You know, and Lex is kind of like, she wants order. So it was really fun to take those three characters and take sort of who is significant to each of them and expand upon that. And it was so much fun to give Bear this like weird little mini love triangle, which a note to anyone who wants to make a comic book based on their friends, like really talk to your friends first before you do these things. Cause Bear's real life boyfriend is Nick. And I had to be like, look, I'm not trying to like rewrite history here just for the story. Like, don't get mad.
But based on that, then are you boy?
Yeah.
Cause your likeness is definitely there in the art. I was like, wait.
Yeah, it's a casual likeness. And that's the other thing, too, that Daniel pushed on. I didn't want to be in the book. I've got my own books where I am the main character. Like, I'm plenty vain enough to do that. but Daniel saw something there. He saw a way to, you know, again, make Bear have more meat. But so he was like, yeah, boy's got to be a talking character. And then I was like, well, like, let's kill him because I don't really want to be a part of this thing. And he's like, no. Like, let's keep doing this thing. So, yeah, it's all really, it's very interesting working with a friend who can see the bigger picture with some characters that you don't see. Like, the, you know, Rock and his girlfriend Jess, I've had a very clear idea of what their relationship should look like. And it's always made sense to me. And it's been awesome having, you know, someone who can pull me out of myself and say, like, this is what you should do for this character because he's important to a lot of people and we should give them a story that would satisfy them. Not the story that caters to them or whatnot, but just the story, you know, a good story. So I love you, Daniel.
So do you guys, you're not like Marvel style then, you're co-writers, so do you... Who starts the process? Is it you, and then he kind of helps like flesh things out, or how do you guys work that?
Yeah, and nothing's normal in my life. The way it all started was we would flirt with this comic book idea, and then I was on a flight back from somewhere, and the first 4 pages of that very first Burn the Orphanage comic just came to me. This sort of sequence of a dude talking about his past and how this orphanage burns down and everyone survives. Everyone dies. Yeah, that's the whole point. Everyone dies, everyone but me. And then it cuts to, you know, him kind of getting ready for a fight and then him just beating up this hobo for information. And in my head, I had this like one song that was like kind of moving the information along. So I told Daniel, and he's like, I've got shivers, or whatever the phrase is. You know, and then I went and laid it out. And that was how we did pretty much every story up until the last 2 issues of Reign of Terror. Just because at that point, you know, the characters are about to infiltrate this building and they split into 3 groups. And, you know, each person does this, that, and the other. And then this character from 3 issues ago shows up here, and this character from that issue shows up there. And I didn't trust myself to wing it the way I have. So Daniel and I sat down and, you know, took some sheets of paper and wrote down kind of like 1 to 20 and then 1 to 28 for that final, 1 to 30 for the final issue, and just broke down everything that needs to happen on each page in order to satisfy all the floating plot elements. So yeah, and then for this next one, Bitter Rivals, I think we're going to go about it completely differently. I think Daniel's going to go in a cave, draft the entire arc, and then I'll be the Daniel and I'll come and polish it, and then I'll start drawing it. He knows what I want out of that story, and I know what he wants. So there's a level of trust between us that, you know, we can kind of let the other person do their thing and then come in and rein it in if necessary. It's a good relationship.
Awesome. So, okay, now you said this and I have to know. What song did you hear playing in your head for the first, you know, 4 pages of Born to Lose?
So do you know the band Sleigh Bells?
No.
No.
No, you're so angry.
No, I'm curious. What kind of music? Like indie rock or what is it?
They're loud. I'll just call them loud. They're catchy, but like everything is on overdrive. They have this song called Demons. And in the song, the lead singer, Alexis Krauss, who I've been very upfront about, she is the inspiration, you know, for Lex and Burn the Orphanage.
Okay.
But she has a lyric that says, "Burn the Orphanage, you're going to pay for it." Something like, "You'll be taken down brick by brick by brick." And so that song, you guys should listen to it after this, is so tight. And the energy and fervor in that song just inspired this entire comic book. And the live set that Daniel and I saw when they played in LA a couple of years ago, again, there was something visceral to the performance that really made us feel something and want to do something, not with the band, but with that feeling they left us with.
So you talked about likenesses, and you said that you had a likeness, and then I guess Lex is also. Are there other characters in your Burn the Orphanage, at least, that have a possibly inspiration or real world analog of some kind?
How dick would it be if I just said to you, no, after our conversation preceding this interview?
Exactly.
So Rock's girlfriend is very clearly in some panels a nod to like 90s Sarah Jessica Parker, and for anyone who knows me, they know that I love Sarah Jessica Parker, not just because of Sex and the City. I thought she was pretty dope before that, like Ed Wood, L.A. Story, Hocus Pocus. And I was asking Daniel, I was like, oh, what do you think Rock's girlfriend should look like? And he was like, make her look like 90s Sarah Jessica Parker. She was really hot back then. and he would like send me all these like JPEGs of her when he thought she was like fuckable. And then there's a girl, there's sort of just a joke character, a background player named Kat, who, and that is sort of my like gift to Daniel. She is Kat Dennings' character from Two Broke Girls. And that's because Daniel just thinks she's very, very hot. So it was like a little gift to him to kind of inject her in the book for a second. And it's a lot of fun to write like cheap puns, which is, you know, that like low hanging fruit is what the Two Broke Girls rule of humor is.
Yep.
and so people were like, God, these writers are dumb. And I'm like, I was just kind of honoring the source material.
It was pure Max. I mean, as I'm reading it, the first thing I did is I looked at Brian and I was like, this looks like Max from Two Broke Girls. And her name is Kat.
They've done episodes with bears. Like they had that one episode with the two bears in the woods.
Yeah.
So like that's kind of also sort of a funny, like I don't know, influence or common interest.
They've got a bear in season 3. Max goes to chef school or whatever you call it, culinary school.
Oh, the big gay bear.
Yeah, he's funny, and like it's really funny because you can see how excited he is when he gets like the good zinger, because you're like, you can tell he's like, oh, this is gonna be great for my reel. But, so, I mean, yeah, you know, Michael Patrick King is gay. I think we're all sort of in this, you know, together, supporting everyone's communities. But, and then Daniel's in the book too. He plays the dude that Kat runs off with in Reign of Terror. That's Daniel.
Oh.
There's a lot of, I need to say this. The character Isabel is my friend Isabel. And it's really funny because she reads the book and she's like, I think it's so hilarious how you write me. Like, I'm this just zany, like, over-the-top caricature. And everyone's like, he didn't embellish anything, Isabel. Like, that's you.
That's, oops.
Yeah, our colorist Renee met her at the Meltdown signing, and I kind of lean in, and I'm like, I know you thought Isabel was real bogus, but now do you get it? And she's like, I completely get it. So plausible. And then Clint is sort of a mix of Pharrell and my friend Eric. And so everyone has touches of everyone else, and except for Rock. Rock is just kind of like an amalgam of all those fucking bruiser dudes in those video games because they all look the same.
Yeah.
And I adore when fans or readers come up to me at conventions and try to pin it down on one. And I'm like, dude, I drew that in a vacuum trying to remember what they look like, and they all look the same.
It's like an average of all the memories from video games in the 90s.
Exactly.
Well, in 8-bits, there's not much that they could have done, aside from maybe change hair color and, like, headband color.
Yeah.
Don't defend their design.
So another book that I didn't realize you were the artist for, but I actually really already knew about and liked, is Little Depressed Boy. I think I heard about it on iFanboy at one point, and I went and looked it up, and I kind of went through a few issues today to refresh my memory, but it, for those of you who haven't read this, it kind of has like a Scott Pilgrim-ish vibe. I say that, I guess, and so I guess like a lot of people would know sort of the subject matter. It's like, you know, relationship, but also a little bit of heightened reality or video game influenced reality, I guess. It's not quite as zany or, you know, over the top as Scott Pilgrim, but the art style to me is very different. Your pencils in Little Press Boy look very different than Burn the Orphanage. Is that like an intention thing? Is that like, did you want just a very different style when you did Burn the Orphanage from what you had done, or like what's the process there?
Well, first of all, thank you for, you know, saying that you heard about it and liked it, or I'm assuming you liked it, but
yeah.
Thank you for that. The funny thing is that style evolved from years of drawing it kind of at different phases in my life. Like a gigantic chunk of that book was drawn while I was editing comics at Skybound. And, you know, there I'd have to like rush these pages out because I'd only have evenings and weekends. So I developed sort of a shorthand language for that character and his world. And then with Burn the Orphanage, LDB was on a bit of a break while we were sort of, you know, getting everything in check. And I was wondering, like, why am I not getting mainstream work? Like, I know I can draw half this shit. Why isn't anyone hiring me? So I did kind of try to show the world other facets of my drawing style with Burn the Orphanage. And I tried to adopt a new language because the things you need to draw a ragdoll boy, you know, talking to adorable, cute girls with bangs, that's a different group of skills than what you'd need to draw a dude kind of, you know, free falling in midair, biting a goat headed wrestler's dick off. So steep learning curve, but yeah, it's intentionally different because neither would translate with the other style. And with the newer issues of Little Depressed Boy, I definitely, it's gotten a little, you know, crisper and more detailed and you can see a little bit of that. And I always have to remind myself, like the creator, writer, colorist, letterer, Sean Steven Struble, he's like, man, you've still got Burn the Orphanage in you because you're giving all the girls really chunky, muscular legs. You need to calm down. And I was like, all right, back to twig legs. Okay.
Well, and it even goes back to your layouts, because as I'm flipping through it here on my tablet, you seem to do a little bit more, I hate saying the word artistic, but certainly not your standard grid layout. You're doing things like there's one panel or one page you have the little depressed boy's head with like these rays coming out of different panels. And I don't remember in Burn the Orphanage you doing as much with layout. Is that like you're saying because you're trying to do more of a sort of straight up like Marvel DC style book? Or is it just different subject matter lends itself to different storytelling?
I don't know. Column A, column B. I think with Little Depressed Boy, it's rooted in poetry. You know, it started out, again, back to, I'm just going to, for shorthand, Struble. He is a poet, and some of the earlier strips when it was a web anthology, they were just poems with panels, you know, attached to them. So there was a bit of freedom in terms of how things would flow. I think both have gotten a little more kind of streamlined in terms of storytelling, and that comes from deadlines and not having the bandwidth to reimagine the board. But, you know, also I think with Burn the Orphanage, like, yeah, I was learning to draw action comic books. And it's funny that you said Marvel or in DC. I was only looking at like Udon, Street Fighter books, Invincible from Skybound, nice. And like Luther Strode from Image Comics. It's funny. It's like, I was like, Marvel, DC? I don't even know. No, that's not true. I do like Chris Pachalo's X-Men, but, whenever he draws it and stuff. But at any rate, yeah, it's because it's a little bit more. I'm running out of vocabulary tonight, but it's because it's more loosey goosey in terms of whatever. Little Depressed Boy does have some freedom in how the page layouts go, because I think you're supposed to be left with a feeling at the end of Little Depressed Boy, and that, you know, getting the reader to that feeling is the most important thing.
Makes sense. And same thing with your autobiographical work, Not My Bag. Again, it's very, I say Scott Pilgrim in a certain sense, just as a visual shorthand. It's got a very sometimes stylistic, impressionistic, I guess, sort of approach. More like, I guess, also like a web comic. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with, like you said, vocabulary to give a visual to the readers. But of course, they're going to go check it out after this.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With that work, I assume you did that before some of these other pieces. Again, was it the same kind of thing where you had like more time, more bandwidth to sort of experiment and try different storytelling techniques out as a way of learning them? Or were you literally just like, you know, almost like story a day? Because it does have that sort of anthology feel, you know, where you're telling like little one-off stories. Like, what was your storytelling idea behind that?
Yeah, I was figuring it out as I was doing it. And I knew that I wanted bits that could be read as like little quick chapters, because I thought, you know, I thought like genius marketing move. Everyone wants to read a book about retail hell. I'll get this on like Vanity Fair. And then I learned very fast that you can't shit talk any department store, even if it's not named, because they are the ones that advertise in those magazines.
Oh, no.
Oh, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I hate that phrase, but, you know, it all works out in the end. But that was a book that I was piecing out as I was making it. And it was my therapy. You know, I was drawing the little depressed boy. I was working full time editing comic books, and I wanted something that was just mine, that no one else had control over, that no one else could tell me what to do. And yeah, so there's a lot of just me enjoying myself, enjoying drawing, you know, and that's, there's nothing bad to say about the other elements in my life. It's just, you know how it is. Even if you have the best day job in the world, it's still a day job.
Yep.
It's still answering to someone else. And if you can, boy howdy, is it nice to be your own boss for a little while.
Yeah,
so that's what my bag was.
No, that's I mean, again, like you said, I have a day job, so it's that same idea. But others here have that luxury of working for themselves, and you do feel more, I think, self-fulfilled, certainly, and master your own destiny. So yeah, that I didn't even think about the fact that advertisers would be hesitant to support something like that. Did Not My Bag have a good reception in the industry critically? I mean, I honestly like did not know about that until you shared it with us, and I feel like I missed it.
Yeah, it did good. It made me money. It didn't make me millions, as you could tell from my layout at New York Comic Con. No, but it was, it needed to come out. I think when we sell out of the first printing, I'm gonna go back and maybe add some more pages and fix it. It was, you know, it was wrapping up right as I was leaving, Skybound and right as a lot of things were going on. And, if it had been done through sort of a bigger publisher like Abrams or Simon & Schuster, they wouldn't have even, you know, put it on the calendar till an entire first draft was done. And Image Comics, you know, back to being sort of the master of your own fate, they say, like, here's the deadlines, here are the timelines, like, the work has to be turned in at this moment. If not, it's late, and you miss these opportunities for marketing. So with all that in mind, you know, I got the book out as best as I could. And I think it is, you know, I'm speaking to you guys. You are both open-minded, wonderful, and queer. This book is about like a gay boy in fashion. I don't know that everyone's going to flock to it. It's also about, you know, me, my character kind of struggling with, to put it lightly, daddy issues.
yeah.
So it's not an easy sell, but you hope for the best and you push it as well as you can, and you hope that it's in the right people's hands who can get to talking about it. So it's enjoying a nice life. Like, you know, people pick it up and discover it and talk about it, and then, you know, orders bump up a little. So yeah, I'm proud of it, but it didn't win the hearts of reviewers and critics all over the world. It was like, oh, cool, this book exists. It's nice.
I mean, I've never worked in retail. I know Pat has. I definitely related to your relationship issues and certain identity things. And like, there were a lot of it spoke to me, and I can appreciate certainly the nightmares of working in retail. But now that I know this is out there, I absolutely will be sharing it with several or as many as people we can think of who would enjoy this, because it is very genuine, and it feels not only like, you know, a very, like I said, genuine story. I mean, it's your story, but it's also really well drawn and just, it's fun. I think it's cool. So I'm very excited that you shared it with us.
Thank you. More to come, I swear.
Now, if you go back and add pages in, can you do a link between this and Burn the Orphanage and have Sarah Jessica Parker's bitten clothing line as part of the retail?
Oh, I don't know. Only because I really, truly, like, I love Sarah Jessica Parker, and that book is kind of like, aside from, you know, a few key designs, very scathing representation of how the fashion industry works. So I would hate to make her feel like she
make them the good people in that book. I mean, the Stephen Barry's people They're out of business. They're not going to go after you. But you can do a nice little nod to Bitten. And by the way, I worked for Stephen Barry's. I came on board with them shortly after Bitten was launched for them. So for about a year, I think I was with them. Every 5 minutes, I had Sarah Jessica Parker talking in my ear through those TVs.
Good. You liked it though, right? You didn't hate it.
To this day, there is still music that they use for those like in-house commercials that is apparently very standard, like stock music that I hear in other commercials. And it's like PTSD. That music plays. I hear like the trumpets, and I'm like, oh my god, what is Bitten? I'm like, oh no, I'm back at Stephen Barry's. I got to stop now.
Aww. I get you. When I was working at a department store, I hated Adele because whatever her big song on 19 was, like that was in the loop of the like 28 song playlist that the department store had. So like I would hear it like four times a day in the context of being miserable trying to get these old ladies to buy, you know, $200 jackets. So it took me a long time to join the Adele train. Luckily, 21 came out, and I'm a fan.
There was no more Chasing Pavements. You were like, all right, I can deal with someone like you.
Yeah, for sure, dude, for sure. And more like Rolling in the Deep. You've read my book.
There you go.
You know that I'm more of a We Could Have Had It All kind of guy.
Well, the hardest part, just real quick, my last retail nightmare story. The last retail job I had, they at one point were pretty good about like almost having it on shuffle. So you kind of had, you know, you hear a song and then you maybe wouldn't hear it the rest of the day. You wouldn't hear it the next day. But by the time I left that store, they had about a 4 hour playlist and it would play at the exact same time every single day. Like Someone Like You would come on or whatever song would come on, because this was only like 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago. And I would be like, okay, it's now 2:11. And my employees would look at their watch and go, how did you know that Adele's on?
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard.
When you can set your watch by Adele, you know you got a problem.
I want to talk about some gay issues for a second.
Please.
Because I feel like I haven't had a place to discuss this. I'm just going to change subjects completely.
Sure.
Sam Smith.
Uh-huh.
He's in a really high-profile place, and he's being accepted for who he is. And yeah. I think it would be really chic if he just would use the word he a little more often when he was talking about love.
Well, does he write all of his own songs, or is he one of those, or does he have it written for him? And because that might explain part of it. But like you said, making it neutral is sort of a choice in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think what he does is he, you know, works with people. I don't quite know.
Okay.
But again, it's like the how will I know thing. The song already had the word he in it.
That's true.
And just in his banter, you know, the songs themselves, I get that you want to have a universal approach to love and you want boys and girls, you know, queer, straight, whatever you are, trans, yada yada, to relate to it. I get that, but you know, when you had a live concert, come on, bro, be you, you know?
Well, this is in my very limited experience as a somewhat singer sometimes, but Pat runs karaoke, and there's a song that I like to sing called Girlfriend by Matthew Sweet. Love that song. I feel weird changing it to Boyfriend, even though I'm not worried about like an identity thing, but it is a change. So it feels unnatural to me to change pronouns for any song. Even if it's more reflective of my lifestyle or whatever, in my orientation, whatever you call it. But I mean, that he's doing that like is odd, given that it would just fit and be fine. So
yeah. I mean, gosh, I love the White Stripes cover of Jolene, and the whole thing. Jack White just sings as, you know, Dolly Parton, like doesn't change a single thing besides sounding raspier and more desperate. But, you know, he sings in the perspective of a straight woman. So I know this has nothing to do with comics. This doesn't have much to do with bears until Sam puts on a few more pounds and grows a beard.
Well, then I'd like him more, that's for sure.
Oh, let me let me tell you, my boyfriend and I, when I saw him on SNL, I was like, oh, dang, I'm hooked. And then I had like a dream that we were dating, like that Sam Smith was like calling me and texting me and just like telling me sweet things. Like we weren't even hooking up. So like there is a legitimate problem in our household with him. there will be a conversation, because I also have the bloated self-confidence that like if I run into him at a party, I'll be like, hey, what's up? I draw comic books. Isn't that cool?
Remember that text you sent me the other night? Oh, wait. Nope, sorry.
Oh, that wasn't real? Let's make it real.
You need to work his likeness into something coming up so you can even say, look, I write comics. And by the way, I wrote the story with maybe your influence.
And then he'd be like, that's lovely. And then I'd be like, yeah, girl. Get it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I hate when the topic of Sam Smith comes up, because I feel like I'm the only homosexual in the world that doesn't like his singing voice.
Oh, I don't like the material right now. I do love the Stay With Me song, but I'm waiting for his heart to get broken for realsies and to get his 21, you know?
Oh, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, I listened to the album one day, and I had it on my iPod. I plugged it into my big speakers in my office, just let it run through, because a friend of mine had told me about the song that he had played for his straight female friends, and the song is Not In That Way. And I'm like, now I've got to hear this. So I played it through, and I'm like, as I'm listening to it, I'm just like, I don't dig this dude's voice. I like the fact that he's out. I like the fact that he's got so much attention. I love all of that. I love him in theory. I'm not a fan of his music at this point. You know, maybe I'll change my mind. Maybe it's like you with Adele in 19, and the next album will come out, and it'll be my 21, his 21, everybody's 21. You know, we'll figure that out. But it's funny that you said the whole thing about the pronouns, because Adam Lambert did something similar with his big breakout song, What Do You Want From Me? I say breakout, but you know what I mean. Like, I think that was one of his first really well-known songs globally.
Like a post-Idol song.
Yeah. And that song was written and recorded by Pink. And the chorus actually uses the pronoun him. And when he recorded it, he changed it to gender neutral. And it was like, dude, why? You're a raging homosexual. I mean, we've all seen you on national television. There's nobody out there that's sitting there going, no straight woman is like, that Adam Lambert, I can get him. No, I mean, no, you can't.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, to play devil's advocate, there are millions of dollars, you know, hinged on these people's careers. And there are dozens of people chirping into their ears, telling them what to do. So, you know, not knowing what their world actually looks like, I would imagine that there's just insane pressure to change who you are at every, you know, every step of the way. So
I know at least one Sony signed artist. He's no longer signed with Sony, but he was at one time. And he was told to not come out. He was told to not make that an issue. And he didn't. His career, whether or not that was the factor, just didn't go very far with Sony. I totally believe what you're saying, that people are just saying, no, don't do this. We know you want to. We have no problem with it. But just keep it cool. Don't, even though you're out, don't like remind people constantly. And it's sad, but I think it is changing. So,
yeah, it's hard to be brave, but, you know, it takes being brave for others to do the same. So
absolutely.
This got really inspirational. Like, it started out kind of like talking just about how sexy bears are, and now it's like, you know, let's come together and do this.
We're an It Gets Better commercial.
There we go. Now, before we move on real quick, speaking of Sam Smith. Thank you.
Easiest name out there.
I know, really. It was too simple. What was that video? We watched a parody of one of his songs.
It's a parody of Stay With Me, and it's one of the guys from Mean Girls and the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir
And he's a really cute bear himself, the guy singing it.
Yeah.
Is it Damien or whatever?
Yeah, that's him. And it's
something like he has the like most Italian last name on it, Danny Francesi or something like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Nine people are going to comment at the thing of this cast and tell us what it is.
Yeah, really.
Go on.
But I mean, it was funny, and it had the head of lettuce. What's her name? Aroma.
Sister Roma was in it because apparently, I guess they recorded it or shot the video. I say during the height of, or I was about to say during the height of. I mean, the Facebook name drama is still going on, but I guess it definitely was a big avenue to get that message out there.
And it's funny too. So Pandora box. Yes, let's talk drag queens. This is, I assume, based on the first issue that I read, a young adult / all ages title.
Yes, you are correct.
And
the penis doesn't pop out of the box at some point.
No dick in that box.
Oh,
it's not a dick in the box. Oh, sorry.
What if a young gay boy or man had the box? The wishing box is what we're talking about. So it's Penny Dora and the wishing box. It's again, just like I was saying earlier, your style changes, it seems like, with each project, and that's I other artists that I really enjoy do the same, and I like seeing that. But this certainly has a more whimsical in a kind of young adult fantastic world, but very grounded in the life of this little girl, Penny Dora, with her single mother or separated mother, and their, by the way, adorable cat. Because I'm also a cat person. We have a little Himalayan running around, and so it almost reminded me of Grumpy Cat, who's one of my favorites, but it wasn't. But by the end of the issue, of course, I was just beaming because here they have this box that grants wishes, of course, like the monkey's paw or whatever, and the cat's the one who gets its wish.
hey, don't spoil the ending.
Oh. Well,
it's Tam. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, Tam. So what? So this is by Michael Stock, and he's writer, and you're doing pencils and inks, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then colors with Tamara. I'm going to say Tamara her name Bonvillain. Wrong. Bonvillain.
Mm-hmm.
And letters by Hope Larson. I mean, this is coming out soon, right? So this it was a pre-release.
Yeah, it's coming out the first week, the first Wednesday of November.
Okay.
And it's such a special little book. I always tell myself I'm not going to work for other writers because I have one. I have a great one. You know, I have someone I work with already. I have a writing partner, like, for Burn the Orphanage. I was like, I need to do something for me. But I met Michael through some mutual friends, and he runs a really awesome sort of concert series, radio series called Part-Time Punks in LA. And we're getting along quite famously, and he told me about this idea that was based off a story his daughter wrote when she was 8 years old. And he took it upon himself to expand, this little one-page thing into a comic series and asked if I'd be interested in illustrating it. I read the script and I was so, charmed by the joy in it. It's such a fun, lighthearted but not frivolous story that I felt like, yeah, I'm gonna draw this. Like, I don't want anyone else to draw this. I want to draw this. So I said yes. It's great. Everyone we've shown it to has been so sweet. We got a quote from Scotty Young, the Rocket Raccoon artist,
sure,
on the cover of issue one. Yeah. So it's been fantastic, and Hope is an Eisner Award winner for doing all ages books, and she has been so kind and gracious to lend her hand in lettering the book and providing feedback on the artwork. It's like, it just really, it's one of those things that felt like everything was pointing to saying yes to that project, and I feel very rewarded being a part of it.
So yeah, I mean, what's the 5-issue, or is it what's your scope on it?
Yeah, it's going to be, like any new series nowadays, okay, we're going to start out with a 5-issue series, and if audiences love it, fingers crossed, cross your eyes, nose, and toes, we're going to continue with another story and kind of give it the, like Harry Potter Hellboy model where, you know, there's just volumes. Because I think it's one of those books that's going to do better in the book market than it will in the sort of floppy month-to-month market. But you need the month-to-month market to promote and build awareness. So yeah, let's hope. Let's hope that it's a successful book. I certainly love doing it.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it will do well, I'm sure, in the young adult market. But it sets up a great mystery about this box, and it's got characters that are very down to earth and believable, and adorable animals, and set during Christmas. I mean, what's not to love?
I don't know. We'll find out when reviews come in, right?
Well, I'm so glad to see this, and now I'm gonna tell my local retailer to try to order it, but. It may be too late for the first. I don't know. I don't know yet how Diamond and all that stuff works, but I have the code that's in here, and I'm very excited to share it with our store. So maybe we'll get some copies in there.
Yeah, I mean, and they can always do reorders. So if the first printing sells out, they will know how many. You know, they will know that there is a demand for a second printing. So
that's true.
Even if your store didn't order enough copies, it's good to yell at them and say, "Get me this book," because second printings, third printings, they're very helpful to the life of a comic book and getting sort of that press during its initial run.
For sure, because we've seen way too many series that we enjoy reading go by the wayside because they don't have the month-to-month support. And, you know, trades are great, but like you said, you don't get the promotion and the word out there if you don't have those month-to-month sales. And, you know, one of my new favorite Marvel series is coming to an end because of that. Their trades are selling great, but they're not having the month-to-month support, so they're getting canned. So we definitely don't want to see that happen to any of your work.
Which book is this, if you don't mind my asking?
All new X-Factor.
Oh, I feel like X-Factor is always kind of like that. Like,
it does
really well, and then sort of loses the hype, and then gets canceled, and then comes back, and then loses the hype, and then comes back.
Yes. And Peter David usually writes it when it does that.
But like the Phoenix, it will return anew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's perennial and it'll come back, but it's kind of sad because it's just been fun. The art's great. Chris Anka's doing the covers, I think. Was it Wada doing? No, Anka's doing the covers and some of the interior art. I like his stuff a lot. He's really sweet. But yeah. It's an interesting time to be in the market right now. I am, by the way, just since you have worked for, and you still have books. I love Image, by the way. I mean, I'm so happy that they're such a strong force in the market these days, putting out such creative and amazing comic books that I think Marvel, and maybe DC or not, but I think Marvel would not be doing what it's doing unless Image was doing what it has been doing for the last a long time. So I'm thrilled to see that really pretty much, I mean, in the top books. Like, they always have books up there. And really come a long way from, you know, sort of the doldrums era where it kind of went down from the initial, you know, meteoric founders to sort of a background noise to now having just, you know, tons and varied content. I mean, I'm a big Image supporter.
Me too. I get so excited. Well, no, I get so excited when I go to the comic book store and I can't wait, you know, I can't wait to go to the Image offices or go to a convention and grab some trades. I have to actually buy the Image book on the stands because I just need it.
Uh-huh.
It's such a nice feeling. And they're all of the creators that I know and work with are fantastic people who everyone's putting their heart and soul into these things. So, you know, if it has that Image eye, it's usually 99.9% of the time worth a shot. Even if you don't think the genre is your taste or your cup of tea, there's always something interesting.
Yes, very much so. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us. I'm really glad that we've gotten to spend some time talking to you. I'm glad to know that you're out there doing cool stuff, and I'm going to try, we'll try with Flame On to share the word about all your stuff coming up, and you know, hopefully we'll see you at another show in the not too distant future. You're on the West Coast, right?
I'm on the West Coast, yeah. So
East Coast shows, you know, near...
Are you guys near, like, is MegaCon by you? Do I need to do that so we can hang out?
Yes,
that please.
Would be an absolute yes.
I do need to do that, and thank you guys so much for having me. And please, please, please enjoy the bust for me this weekend. I will be completely wasted at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery singing Lana Del Rey, singing sad, nice. Sad songs. I know, even if you're not a fan of her, like, how beautiful is that image of just draping yourself in an American flag, like, next to all these, like, tombstones, like, watching her just sing Blue Velvet. It's going to be, I think, awesome.
I am so jealous of you right now. Not that I'm not going to have a good time this weekend, of course, but if I could be there for this, this sounds amazing.
We'll trade notes. We'll trade notes and see who had the better weekend. I have a feeling because your weekend is longer, you will have more fun than I, because mine's only going to be, like, 3 hours. Yours is 3 days of debauchery and lovely company. So
we'll be posting on Tumblr.
I still think you're gonna win.
We'll share some of our Bear Man candy with you on Tumblr. How's that?
I expect a couple of hearts from me.
Yay!
Well, before we go, now speaking of Tumblr, let our listeners know where they can follow along, where they can reach you, find your stuff, all that good shit.
It's typically just my name, SINAGRACE.com, or put, you know, an @ in front of that on any of the things. I'm on all of them except for Vine, because I was like, why do I need Vine?
I think you need more than 6 seconds for video that you're going to be in.
Oh yeah, I'm a long-winded man. So all of the things, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I might even still have a MySpace somewhere, but
Justin Timberlake hasn't taken it over yet.
No, he hasn't danced his way all over my Facebook. that adorable bastard. By the way, talk about a guy who transcends having a type. Like, you've seen my type, you know what my type is, I assume. And it is not him, but goddamn would I want that dick in the box.
Love it.
I think most of our listeners out there will agree with you. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, I love my Bears, but fuck, Justin Timberlake. There's something about him.
He grows a beard every so often, or at least, you know, some nice facial scruff, so we'll take him.
Oh yeah, I can't wait till he gets, like, just, like, over the whole dancing thing and puts on a little weight. That'll be fine. I'll take him. It's okay. He doesn't need Jessica Biel.
Well, we'll trade, since Zach Galifianakis now is skinny, not skinny, but he's lost a lot of weight. Someone has to step up and put on some pounds.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
To maintain the balance.
Well, there's a lot of Bears on TV this fall, if I do say so myself. A to Z has one. Mulaney has one. And then, yeah, we're talking about Two Broke Girls. They're showing up in their own little way.
Well, and I was just pleased to find out that I did not realize that John Wesley Shipp is gay. And he was the original Flash, and now he is the Flash's dad on the new Flash.
Okay.
I was like, that's a great addition to our team. Apparently that's new to me, but you know, heck.
Well, and the Pied Piper has been cast, and I can't remember the actor's name, but he's open. The actor is an openly gay person, and the character is also.
Wentworth Miller? The one from
Prison
Break?
No, he's somebody else. Well, but then he's
hold
on there.
We got that Mo on the show.
Yeah, and then they just announced the new DC movies slate, and Flash, they're going to have a separate Flash, also played by an openly gay actor, so it's good times.
Little big movement. Little big movement.
Exactly. Well, again, thank you so much, Cena, and we really look forward to seeing more of Burn the Orphanage and Penny Dora, and I missed the LB, Little Depressed Boy, that is still going or coming back? Or
yeah we just came back last month.
Okay.
We put issue 2 to bed this week, so it'll issue 2 will be coming out the first week of November, the same Wednesday as Penny Dora number 1. So I'm a tired but satisfied man, and thank you guys so much for having me. It's
not
been like
you're welcome back anytime you got something to promote, let us know. We'll throw it up on our Facebook page, let our listeners know about it, and anytime you want to come on, You're welcome guest.
I love you guys so much. Thank you.
Flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of Tops and Bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.